Well, good evening, and welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Respect is what the veterans have earned in our nation, and we're going to continue through Warrior Connection to ensure that they get the respect and the medical care they need. Well, as we move forward in the Progressive Radio Network, we're continuing to provide information and education. Today, we're going to talk about education. What makes a good school? How do we select a school? What should we expect in our schools? And our guest for today is Jerry Sanderson, Associate Director of Schools for the Peoria, Illinois Diocese of Catholic Schools. Jerry, welcome to Warrior Connection.
Joined by Dr. Sharon Weiss, our superintendent, and Bill Engelbrecht, who is Director of Advancement for our school's office.
Boy, we got the whole thing. I had the pleasure of meeting Sharon when we had the 100th anniversary and celebration of St. Malachy's School here in Rantoul, Illinois, and from that, this thing came about. Well, welcome.
Welcome,
Sharon.
Thank you.
Well, what we'd like to talk about, and Sharon, you sent me the paper, and it's an incredible paper, Why Catholic Schools Do Well. I mean, it's when I sat there and, you know, I heard you guys talk, and I knew the foundation of it because my wife and my family have been both involved in teaching and going to the schools in the diocese for many years, so we knew it worked. And then when I listened to you talk at St. Malachy's and understanding what's happening, and then you sent me this paper, I'm going, this is simple. it explains it all, and it doesn't get any easier than this. Well, maybe, Jerry, you can tell us a little about your paper and what the foundation is, because it's really neat, because when you open your paper, you're talking about the foundation of teaching as ethics and morality. How does this all come about, sir?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head that it's strong moral values that are the number one reason that families select Catholic schools. There's research that indicates not only that that's what families are looking for, but it's something that Catholic schools excel at, always have. One of the key things that our teachers do is instill character in students, and I think that strikes a chord with today's families. They're not finding that in the larger society, and they like that tradition and stability that they find in Catholic schools.
It seems to me that is so critical and so important, because all we hear in day in and day out across the nation, it doesn't matter where it is, and actually across the world as I've traveled, is the schools in the normal population are having a problem. Behavior is atrocious. Student preparation and participation in school is atrocious. And yet there's a firm belief in all educators that every child has the ability to exceed and to excel. And so where is the glitch in here? What is happening? What should we look for? I mean, if the foundation, as you're saying, is ethics and morality, which sets everything up that follows, where do we go and what do we need to do here?
Well, you know, I think we have a big advantage over public school education, and the fact that we're faith-based, that we're rooted on, Christian principles. We have a foundation that we can depend on that drives our schools. You know, we have that strong moral base to rely upon, and that's something that I believe a lot of the secular institutions are lacking today. With, our culture, everything's up for grabs. Nobody seems to know what's right and what's wrong, and that's not true in a Catholic school. So, I think just the whole religious dimension of our schools in our mission that makes that whole moral piece fall into place for us in a way that it can't in secular school settings.
Well, once a child gets into the school, I mean, we look at the school day, so they begin with this stuff, and I know where I've been involved as a substitute and watching. They start this off at the very beginning where this is understood. This is what your individual responsibilities are. This is how you fulfill your responsibility. So it seems the clarity is totally there in the parochial school, in the Catholic school system, versus in the general public school, it's kind of an up for grabs. A kid comes into school, puts in the locker, runs to the classroom, runs all over creation. It just seems the foundation is missing.
Yeah, I think one thing that helps us is the strong parental support that we have. I have a number of friends who are public school administrators, and they don't find the same level of parent support. Part of it, too, you know, I mentioned we have that religious foundation. Also the fact that, families have to make big sacrifices to send their children to our schools. You know, we are tuition-based. It's not easy to afford a Catholic school education. So parents have made a major investment when they selected a Catholic school for their child, and so they're going to support the administration and back that, you know, the rules and the behavior guidelines that have been established. They've invested financially. They've invested, in terms of they had to make a conscious decision to send their child there. It wasn't just that the school was in their neighborhood, but they had to make a choice. And so they're backing it 100% at home.
Well, that seems to be critical. Sharon?
If I might add, too, I raised my son as a single parent, and one of the beauties of having him go to a faith-based school was that we partnered. I mean, what I taught him at home was modeled in the school, the same morals, the same approach to curriculum, where was Christ in throughout the curriculum, and that was very reassuring for me because, you know, our church teaches that parents are the primary educators, and that is a great good. And yet we find in this culture that we live in that is so anti-moral, anti-belief, that we could also help form our parents in what does the church teach to give them more of a basis and a foundation as well when they're raising their children. Because we invite parents as to be, you know, cooperators, to be, you know, we're in this together. We're a community.
I think what you just mentioned is probably the key in what's missing again in so many schools that are struggling. Because I know in the public school where I've taught, off and on a substance, retiring from the university, too often, too many of the kids will sit in the class and whatever happens during the school, but when the school bell rings, they go to their locker, get their jacket, put their books in the locker, and they're out the door. And there's no more thought about at all about doing homework or doing assignments or preparing for the next day. And then they go home, and in many cases we found out, and this is what we learned, the child wanted to stay at school so they would misbehave to stay at school because there was nothing at home for them to go to. It's such a problem that for whatever reason, this thing that's, the Catholic schools or parochial schools have been around forever and ever and ever, but you continuously see the same success with the kids that come through.
Well, I think one of the things, because we have that tradition, you know, as you mentioned, Catholic school education has been around, you know, in this country for almost 200 years, but, you know, the church has been in the business of education for, you know, a couple of thousand years. So, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We have learned through the past what works and what doesn't work, and, you know, we rely upon the best of the past, also still open to, you know, whatever innovations are there. You know, we're certainly forward-thinking, but at the same time, we have that solid foundation to build on that, we're not going to throw it out anytime soon. We're here for the long haul.
So when a parent is selecting a school, whether they're in the community school or looking at a parochial school, they're in the military or the Guard or the Reserve, or they're getting out and, you know, getting out of the military and moving their family. Often they got young kids, so we're definitely looking at elementary age kids where you've got kindergarten on up. But something else, and I know here in the diocese, we have an extraordinarily strong preschool program also. And could you explain a little bit of how that is and why that's so important?
Well, you know, we've had a big change in our culture in the last generation or two where, due to the reality of the economics. In many cases, both father and mother have to work, and you know, the alternative for those families with young children is a daycare program, or to, you know, look at something like a Catholic preschool program where it's not just babysitting. We're not just watching the kids, but we're teaching them and laying the foundations that parents, if they were able to be home with them all day, would be, you know, providing at home. But we're partnering with families and building upon those values that they hold near and dear, and supporting them in that role. And I think that's why our preschool programs have grown so much, especially in the last 10 or 15 years.
I know one thing here right in Rantoul, and having taught the different things and in the area here where we've had the kids either at Holy Cross or St. Matthew's or St. Malachy's, and then had them in high schools both in Urbana and Champaign and then here, there's something that happens in the school during the school day or during their curriculum. Because what I've seen and the experience I have, and again, this directly, you've got to report it, Jerry, in your thing, those kids, as they progress through the years, there's something magical that's happening. The solid foundation that they have in reading and writing, and then, which is all, totally confirmed underneath the ethics and morality underneath it, there's something happened that these kids, as they progress, continue to excel. I mean, this is, is something that all parents need. What's happening here? Why is this so successful?
I would give some credit as well to our leadership, our principals, and then our teachers in the classroom. You know, we encourage them strongly to go back to learn, to improve their skills, to reach out and do as much professional development. So they are really on the cutting edge of a lot of academics in that regard. So we encourage that. So that comes across in the classroom. And I was just thinking when you were talking about preschool, when I was the principal of an elementary diocesan school here, we taught the children in the preschool, this is age 3 and 4, were learning Spanish and they were learning sign language. I mean, little bits and pieces, but at the same time, what a tremendous good. You know, not only did they learn art and music and other, and reading, but, and they were on computers and yet we allowed them to play. So that is a part of their development as well. So there are things that we can offer in the schools that perhaps in a public school they have more restrictions, more certain things that they have to follow that are the guidelines set out by the feds. So I think it's a great good that we have that freedom, that we can infuse the academics with faith.
Well, I think you just mentioned, and again, you're the expert on this stuff, but the child's ability to learn and develop and acquire skills is at its peak when they're in that 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 year period. So if they have that foundation, the brain, as I understand it, is growing in leaps and bounds and absorbing all this stuff. If they're exposed to all of this stuff, where it's consistently the same expectations, there is no way but up, isn't there? Am I missing something, or is this kind of like the foundation of it all?
Let me add one other thing, Doug. You know, when you've got the children in preschool at 3 and 4, and they've had those 2 years, and over at the other schools, maybe a public or community school, they're not starting until kindergarten possibly, those kids in the private school, the Catholic school, are 2 years ahead. How can the public school catch up? Well, you say, well, they'll just study harder. Well, so will the kids from the Catholic school. So it becomes a huge problem for the public school kids to catch up when the Catholic school kids are going just as fast. They're not slowing down. And so that two-year bulge sometimes is going to be very difficult to erase. And as we track the data through the elementary years and into high school, that seems to be the case, that it becomes extremely difficult for them to catch up. And when you add that two-year advantage with those dedicated teachers who really have high expectations for those kids. They want those kids to be the very best that they can be, and that is something that comes from a moral foundation as opposed to just wishful thinking. So it's a tough bogey for the public schools to catch up or to keep up, no matter how much money. And as we all know, there's a huge amount of money poured into public education these days, yet with far fewer dollars, the private Catholic schools seem to not only hold their own, but in many, many cases, excel.
Well, I think you hit the money, hit it right on the money is the issue, because unless I'm in something in my career, you know, going through all the stuff and go to graduate and graduate program at the university and all the stuff in the schools with my kids, it doesn't cost any money to learn how to read. It doesn't cost any money to learn how to do math problems. It doesn't cost any money to understand geography or anything else. It's a matter of the total emphasis where the child comes to school prepared for the school day. So say, for example, we have an assignment on a given day. They have read the assignment prior to getting to school or have been made aware of what the curriculum is and what's next on the syllabi. And then they come in and they're totally ready and participating. I know with the behavior thing, and again, the question I've got for you, I know in the public schools, say for a 50-minute period, we're lucky if we got 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes of effective teaching. That's substantially different with what you're experiencing, isn't it?
Yeah, our children are engaged 24/7. I can say that from my own personal experience. I've been a teacher in our Catholic schools in Peoria Diocese. I've served as a principal, and I've had my own children enrolled in Catholic schools in our diocese. We've also had the opportunity serving on accreditation teams to visit Catholic schools in other parts of the country, and I can say it's been universally true wherever I've been. Our students are engaged. There isn't that downtime. So when there's a switch from English class to math class, whatever, the transitions are quick and smooth, and the kids are right back on task with the new subject material. And so that extra time is critical to the academic learning that takes place in our schools. You know, more time on task, the research shows, students will learn more. Their achievement scores go up.
Now,
quite frankly, Doug, we have smaller class sizes, you know. Of course, you can individualize attention and really assignment to task when you have smaller class sizes. And that is an advantage that we do have because, you know, some of my friends who are principals and teachers in the public schools, they might not have that ability to teach maybe 17 students in a class. They might have 30, and that would be a little bit more difficult, obviously.
Well, yeah, that comes into play, but then again, the same thing. If the child has a solid foundation for the ethics and morality and understands when they come to school, they behave, they listen, they fully participate, and they're engaged learners rather than being disruptive, as is happening, and again, this is reported over and over again because I know right here in our own community, we can look and see what's happening within the public school systems, and they're looking at incredible, incredible problems. Say, for example, we got 7th and 8th graders that are reading at 2nd and 3rd grade reading level. We got, again, the 8th graders and freshmen in high school that their math level is somewhere around down 3rd or 4th grade level. And these children are all totally, unless I miss something in my experience, the children are all totally capable of learning. And it's not that the teachers aren't teaching, but the child and the family aren't engaged. So, I mean, it's how much in this whole educational system is the family support and the family engagement and the family being prepared to ensure the child gets the work done, come into play?
We hear sometimes, too, from our public school friends, you know, well, you don't have to accept all students where, you know, we're free education. And we say, well, yes, but our mission is that we will service the needs that are there. And if we have children who have special needs, they are welcome in our schools, if, you know, with reasonable accommodations. So we don't want to be schools of just the elite or those who are gifted in learning. We're open, according to the mission of our church, to any child.
See, that is just so wonderful. I mean, we're talking about what happens in a classroom and what makes one classroom different from another. Can you guys describe, based on your knowledge and experience, what an ideal classroom situation would be? What happens in a given learning sequence for, I mean, any subject?
You know, I think one of the unique things that we do that separates us from a lot of schools is the fact that we're able to reach the whole child. We really have a holistic education. So in our classrooms, we're not just touching a child's mind or, you know, their social, emotional well-being, but we're able to also touch, you know, their moral sense, their spirituality, you know, their physical growth. All of that comes together in the classroom for us in a way that's not possible in a school that's not faith-based. And I think that makes all the difference. You know, we're created by our Lord as, you know, we have a physical body, we have a mind to use, but we also have that spiritual component that's a key part of us. And when our teachers are able to address all facets at once in the classroom, that gives us an edge that other schools simply can't replicate.
One thing that I've learned here, especially during the summer, because with my kids and my grandkids, we'd spend a lot of time at the swimming pool. But the kids that I had in classes, their parents would dump them off at the pool in the morning and then basically leave them there all day, and they'd come back at the end of the day and pick them on up. And I know when I'd be in there with my kids, playing with my kids, these other kids are looking for something. They're asking for something. They come over and say, can you play with me? Can you give me some thoughts? Give me some ideas? So, again, there's an emphasis there. I think the child, even in the poor school environment, knows that something is missing and knows that they need to obtain it, but they might not always have that given that opportunity, or if they get it in school, and what we've seen over and over again, I don't know, Sharon, maybe you can, or one of you guys can address this. We've seen in the past where this true emphasis on excelling in a school is sometimes looked down and said, you don't want to do that. I mean, that's the big difference, isn't it?
That there's a culture where academics is not encouraged? Is that what your question is?
Uh-huh, exactly.
Well, I do feel that there are many public schools who do have a mission, you know, to teach. Again, what is the main difference is that we are mission-based. We're not on faith. We're not just there to present academics, but that we are trying to bring academics into why is it that we want to learn? What is it that our Lord wants us to develop intellectually? Why? So,
just a simple act of starting each class with a prayer. It really sets the tone for the whole lesson in a way that can't be replicated in a public school setting.
Yeah, because you're setting the whole child where the whole child's totally engaged. I guess when we're looking at in a learning sequence, and I guess something we can all discuss, when I went through and did my graduate work, one thing was very clear, that as when you're preparing the lesson plan, you get it very clear on what you're going to do, what your objectives are, how you're going to learn in sequence. In other words, you're building on knowledge concepts or building on skills. You start out with the easier ones and then build up, so you've got a continuous, organized sequence of learning. And then as the child comes in, if the child, say, for a given lesson on a given day, has pre-read the assignment or pre-read the information, at least they're familiar with that and familiar with the vocabulary, then they can come in as the teacher teaches, whether they're hands-on or strictly verbal or whatever they're doing, which is a whole total mixture depending on the lesson plan. And so then the child is going there and they're participating. So you have active participation, which you've already made real clear that you've got the time on task as far greater. then the child, at the end of it, they get the summary and they go back home, they do their assigned homework, review it, and then if they need help, they come back and get help the next day. I mean, that's been the way learning has gone on since antiquity, and I don't think does any of the new gizmos and everything, it's not going to improve on that, is it?
Yeah, technology is just a tool, and I think, you know, we can put lots of bells and whistles in front of people, but ultimately, you know, it's you have to get down to that foundation, you know, how engaged the students are, and what level of support do you have from parents, quality of your teachers, you know, like I said, the ability to truly present a holistic-based education. To follow up on something Dr. Weiss just shared, that you know, we can talk about how God has formed us, you know, our intellect, our heart, the spiritual side, and address those when we're learning in a Catholic school. And, you know, we're not leaving anything out of the equation. You know, we're able to do it all in a Catholic school, and that makes, you know, gives us a tremendous advantage.
Well, I know here we've got, I mean, you've got everything, as we've already talked, from preschool, you got definitely the elementary, so we kindergarten through eighth grade. And I know we got St. Thomas More here in Champaign County, and you over there in Peoria, in Bloomington, you've got major Catholic high schools. So the whole thing is all based all the way across. So how is the curriculum pretty much the same, you know, what you're going to see in a conventional school, pretty much the same in the Catholic high schools then also?
Well, we certainly offer the same subjects, you know, you're going to find in any high school, public or Catholic, you know, students learning algebra and geometry and biology and physics, et cetera. But the curriculum is different in a Catholic school because we infuse our faith and our values and our beliefs. We have a Catholic worldview that's infused throughout our curriculum. We have a different way of looking at the world. So, I think I think you would see some substantial differences in our approach, not necessarily in the subjects covered, but how we teach them.
Also, Doug, in our curriculum, especially in our Catholic schools, we do not want to sacrifice learning the arts. I mean, that is very important to the developing the whole child, foreign language, music, you know, orchestra, whatever it is that we can teach besides our core academic subjects, which we would never, ever, you know, take away, of course. But I like the development of the whole child, and I believe that that is something that our curriculum across the board always tries to stress as well. And that's not something we're going to cut because of budgets. It is still very primary in what we do.
Well, that's obviously a do it. Now, the same thing, I mean, obviously we're seeing tremendous differences, and again, on the achievement of the individual within the grade schools. We're definitely, I know, a St. Thomas More over here. I mean, the graduates and everything, what they're learning, coming out of the high school there at St. Thomas More and going on to the university, I mean, they are just incredibly prepared. And I think, again, does the data indicate, I mean, from what I understand, the achievement, once they get into post-secondary at the university or junior college or four-year college, whatever they're doing, is just light years ahead, isn't it?
It is, and, you know, unlike a lot of public schools where, you know, maybe three-quarters, maybe only a half of their students go on to college, we find that virtually 100% of our students go on to attend college, and they excel there. We have one of our high schools, Peoria Notre Dame, recently over a six-year period, had 100% of its minority students go on to attend college. That's unheard of in a public school setting. You know, there's a lot of reasons for that. It's the sound preparation, so they're, you know, I think it's borne out by our test data that shows that our students are better prepared to succeed in college. Part of it is, I believe, something that a researcher named James Coleman at the University of Chicago referred to as social capital. You know, the fact that for any given student in our Catholic schools, they're surrounded by a community of people who believe in the importance of high standards, and they're challenged by their student peers, by parents, by teachers. The entire community values having those children go on and succeed and eventually go on and be successful in college and career. And they don't necessarily experience that in their community, depending upon where they live and in the public school they might attend. So, you know, that certainly contributes to some of that.
Doug, just imagine if you're a freshman in high school and you enter a high school where 100% of the kids there fully expect to go to college. Not 80% of them, but all of them expect to go to college. You know, of course, as a freshman in high school, you're subject to a lot of peer pressure. Well, there's a great example of peer pressure. So if you're a slacker or somebody who's quiet, maybe even if you're a really good person and you're sort of unsure, everybody else, every single seat in that school has expectations for themselves, high expectations for themselves to go to college. Contrast that for a second. If you stepped into another school, and that other school is a lot of people fully expect not to go to college, will openly state that they have no interest in going to college, and then some of them are unsure, and you wind up with, I think, the numbers in the neighborhood of 49, maybe 50% of them are going to college. We're all the same. You know, we're human beings, and we're subject to the environment that we're in. And the environment that you're in a Catholic high school is pretty remarkable with regard to expectations.
Yeah, as Bill was talking, I was thinking that too, Doug. There is that expectation. You know, we have academic rigor. We expect our students we set the bar high because we expect them to get there, and we provide help to get them there. And if not, then we need to go back and look at why they're not there. So one of the main things that we also like to expose our students to is service. We're about, you know, serving one another. And we have service projects in our high schools. A lot of our grade schools now are doing Christian service projects, as well as we see direct correlation between how a student is engaged in school academically and with service, and how that carries over into their adult lives with civic leadership. So there are so many things that are intertwined here. And again, who sets the expectation? Well, the school sets the expectation. And how do we set it through the school? If we go back to the documents on Christian education that our church has written. So it all seamlessly flows.
Yeah, I mean, you're just giving.
I just want to quickly follow up on something Sharon said about the rigor in our schools and those high standards for all. Last year, I had the opportunity to visit a STEM lab in a local public school in our community, and it was a wonderful lab that this school had set up for STEM education, but it was for the gifted. And the difference, I think, you'll find in Catholic schools, when we have STEM labs in our school, it's not for just the gifted. It's for everyone. We have those same expectations for all of our students. They all receive, you know, that rigorous education. That's not necessarily the case in some of our competitor schools.
Well, I think what you're right on the key point. What I'm hearing here is the establishment of expectations, the driving of the expectations by not only the teachers but their peers, and then also the total support from the family at home. So when the child gets done in the school day, and I know I was raised, and I go home when we raised our kids, when we go home, the same expectation is consistently there.
Yeah. So again,
and then all of a sudden everybody's flying with eagles.
Exactly. So as Bill always likes to say that, you know, we teach what you teach at home. We teach the values that are taught in the home. And that's, again, we join together. This is a community.
How can we take the model that you've got so aptly described here and so, I mean, extraordinarily supported in your paper, Jerry. How can we take that model, and this purpose, again, why this radio show, why I wanted to do it so much with you, Sharon, is how can we take this model that's working so successfully across the country, across the world, and somehow imbibe that model into the community schools such that they can also excel? Because we got extraordinarily good teachers coming out of the same schools. We got, as we've all known, and what you've just said, you're having the children excel once they get in the system, no matter what group they're coming from. So there's something here that, I mean, something, how do we get this across, or how we get this adopted to solve the problems we're seeing that are having horrible effects in the public school system?
Well, Doug, you pose a really tough question, and I'd only answer it by saying if you just took all the families on your block and got them in a room and asked them if they could all agree on morals and values, what were the strong morals and values that we should all agree on? If you were able to do that, you could probably do that in the public schools. But in today's secular world, I don't know that that's possible, or at least it's going to be extremely difficult, because what you think are strong moral values are maybe completely different from somebody that lives two houses down from you. So it's a real, real tough problem in today.
And Doug, I have a lot of friends who are public school teachers or public school administrators, and one of the things that they tell me in response to that question you just posed is that if there was a way they could bring prayer back into schools, that would make a big difference. I don't see that happening anytime soon. But I think when prayer was removed from public schools, it started to really change the playing field.
It's going the other way.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely correct. It's that emphasis on the whole child, because if the child feels good about themselves, they feel good about their within the group, and they're all treated with respect across the whole class, and all the kids work together to help everybody excel. I mean, here we're back to the flying with the eagles again, but what I've seen, and I think what's in the public school problem, is you might have maybe five kids out of 20, but those five kids out of 20 are so disruptive that the class, effective class teaching and instruction and learning just totally collapses within the community school system. I mean, that's what I see and hear all the time.
As a system of schools here in the Catholic Diocese of Peoria, I mean, we're 26 counties, 17,000 square miles. We have 44 schools, 11,500 students, and 1,000 teachers. So basically, we started 3 years ago with a strategic planning process. It's Leadership 101. You go back, you start planning, and then you decide, you know, how do we bring this system all together to be speaking the same language? And that does take a lot of systematic thinking, and we went back to the beginning and we formed a model based upon best practices and research, and we got our schools trying to talk in the same language. So we had a common language that we had to identify, and we took the leadership as the diocesan office to help define that. So again, it's a model that really isn't new. It's just a model that works, and it's something that we had to deliberately and intentionally go out into our schools to do. So that, I think, anyone can do.
Well,
also,
I think I know
you'd asked about how can this model be taken to our community schools. Well, I think the reality is, and some people don't see this, our Catholic schools are community schools. They're not government schools, but they are open to the community. So they're not restricted to those that profess the Catholic faith. They're open to anyone who wants to receive a values-based education. And we have lots of families who of other faith traditions who choose our schools and excel in that environment. And so maybe part of the answer to that question is to, for our people to start to recognize that Catholic schools are community schools. It's something that's out there available to all. It's not an exclusive private club.
Virtually every single one of our schools has what we call unchurched families who have decided that having their child raised in a strong moral environment is something that's terribly important to them. So making people aware of that, I think, is important. Now, there's the politically incorrect subject of maybe there should be some choice for individuals in the state for them to be able to go to any school that they want to, and maybe that there's an opportunity to for some funding that could be available for an individual who chooses that they would like to go to a private school, that there's some of the money could be allocated from the state basis to allow them to make
that
choice.
Teaching.
But that's a sticky wicket right now. There's a lot of people who are not in favor of the ability to let people choose.
Well, the other thing, too, and I think...
We're advocating tax credits.
Pardon, Sharon?
Higher tax credits. We're working right now with an advocacy group with the Catholic Conference of Illinois Kids Campaign, where we're trying to get the tax credit raised for a family, for parents who choose to send their children to a non-public school.
Well, now, the other thing, too, again, in this area, and I think this is across the nation, again, in our area, we have both rural families, we have solid academia, say for example, down here at St. Thomas More, obviously a lot of those families are associated with university where you have a very high educational professional level. And then we have other schools where you're looking at rural farm families as a predominant thing, or they're working in the factories, again, say over in Danville. But yet we're seeing the same thing where the if I understand it right, you're seeing the same thing where the child is still excelling no matter what group they're coming out of. Am I missing something here?
You're exactly right. We 2 years ago, we began a strategic planning initiative called Faith in Our Future. We visited 43 Catholic schools in Peoria Diocese over the course of a year. We helped them with data analysis, looking at their assessment scores, their finances, et cetera. One of the things that came out of that process is we discovered, and it surprised a lot of folks, in every single part of our diocese, we were excelling to the point that the students taking the ACT in our Catholic high schools were blowing their public school counterparts out of the water. We were number one everywhere, and a lot of people didn't know that. That's true regardless of whether our high schools are, you know, in a university community, out in a factory town, or a rural community. It's true across the board.
I know one thing. I was very lucky when I did my graduate work at the University of Illinois, and this is 30-odd years ago. I was extraordinarily lucky because in most of my classes, the time I did it, I had Sister Anne, who at that time was the principal of Holy Cross in Champaign. And the emphasis that she brought into our classroom and our discussions as a regular nun, you know, in principle, was absolutely mind-boggling. It was just like, this is really good, because she was taking and transferring and putting that into our whole ideas and in the stuff at the University of Illinois. And you could see, you could just feel the excitement. You can see the energy just flowing out over all over the place. Yeah.
And I think it's important to acknowledge that the public schools have some wonderful, marvelous, bright teachers. They cannot go into the classroom and articulate the kinds of things that you saw from that nun. That's not permissible.
Yeah,
that's
true.
One of the things, too, we're very excited about in our Catholic schools and the diocese, where we've had a lot of new religious communities that have established a presence in our diocese over the last 5 to 10 years. We now have religious sisters at the high school of St. Thomas More, We have a religious presence of the Salesians at Holy Cross in Champaign. St. Matthew has the Franciscan Sisters of the Martyr St. George. We have here in Peoria, we have Dominican Sisters, Sisters of the Pierced Hearts of Jesus and Mary. We're having these communities that are seeing a lot of new vocations, and they're coming in and being a witness for our students. They're able to witness to the faith in a way that I think, you know, a lay person working in maybe a public school just simply couldn't possibly do.
I know here in St. Malachy's in Rantoul, Sister Anne, who was principal and now pretty much retired, her impact on the community was staggering, and it was not just that she was teaching the kids that she saw in the classroom every day or in the school when she was principal. She was teaching it all over the place, and it was, she's like a magnet for the kids. But it was something that was coming out, and you could see it just, I mean, like a radiant light coming out and pulling kids too. And that's something, I guess that's what you're describing, that's a unique characteristic, isn't it?
Yes, and I would say, we, having been a teacher, a counselor, a principal, and now superintendent, you know, there is a hunger for Jesus Christ in this world, and I think that is one of the greatest gifts that we bring as a system of schools because, you know, make no mistake about it, we have academic rigor, we are about academic excellence, but we have a mission to bring our children to heaven, and it is a saving mission. And that is something that, again, you know, as we hear, you know, our hearts are restless and until they rest in thee. So we try to bring our children into that saving knowledge.
There's a cute picture that is circulated in Catholic school circles around the country, and it has either a little boy or a little girl holding a sign, and it says, "My goals," and then underneath it says, "College, heaven."
Yeah.
You're not going to see that sign being held by a public school child. But that's really what we're about, bringing kids not only to success in this world, but more importantly in the world to come.
Well, that's where it all begins, because I think, you know, every child's going to, as they grow up, and make their decision. Some obviously will complete school and finish high school. They go into the military and make that career. Other ones might select to go into the professional trades or go to a trade school to be a carpenter or a plumber. Other ones might go to a junior college or a, you know, a four-year college. Other ones are going to go into the university. So these children depends on everything, but the foundation that's going to allow them to do it has to be solid all the way across. I mean, what I've seen at the university level when I've taught at undergraduate and graduate level, the difference in the preparation for the child when they come in is really significant based on what they had in the family support and then what they can do with that, because that foundation is either weak or strong. But if they got a strong foundation, no matter what area they select to go into and where they're going to go, they're going to fly like mad. I guess that's one of the reasons I wanted to do it, because the model is so strong and everything, and the data is so strong that somehow we had to get the message out.
I think you've touched on something when you talk about getting the message out, and we really appreciate you spending time with us. Message isn't out. And shame on us, but it's sort of a well-kept secret that our schools excel in the way they do, and we haven't told enough of our own parishioners, we haven't told enough of our own families, and we haven't told enough of the public at large about the story, about what's being done in Catholic schools and how well these kids are excelling.
Yeah, and I guess that's something that, well, we can always do when we continue to grow. Where's the future? I mean, obviously, you know, economics are driving it, salaries drive everything. I mean, there's no doubt there's a difference in what the Catholic school is able to pay a teacher versus what they're going to get into a public school system. But what the interesting part is even though they're paid less in the Catholic parochial school system, the children on the overhaul are doing greater than the ones where they're being paid more. But that doesn't mean the teacher's not good or bad. It just means that the amount of money necessarily spent doesn't necessarily equate with child success or achievement.
Doug, I think we're going to see more in the future of programs like what they did in the state of Indiana, where they have their choice scholarship program, and the state is providing vouchers so that families have the option to send their children to Catholic schools or another private school or to the local public school. One of the things the state legislature recognized in Indiana was it was cost-effective for their state to enable families to choose a Catholic school education because that's less expensive than to take those same kids and educate them in a public school setting. And knowing the pressures that states all over our country are facing financially, I think we'll see more and more efforts in the future where it becomes the logical choice due to economics, to enable families to send their children to the school of their choice because, we have a model where we're able to provide an education, a tremendous education, for substantially less money than what's true in government-run schools.
Yeah, say the other thing, too, and I think the question that comes up, we've got a major problem right here in Champaign that's in the news all the time. We have so many of these children that are going through school, and for whatever reason, they don't excel there, they don't do the work, and then they're getting in trouble when they come on out. But they don't have this foundation, this solid thing that you've just emphasized through this entire conversation of the holistic thing where you have the ethics, the morality, you have the education, you have the expectations. So all that whole packet for the child to see and understand where they're going and what they need to do is so solid that somehow it's missing in the regular schools. And that doesn't mean the principals and the teachers aren't doing a good job because they're excelling. I mean, they're doing it and they're teaching it. But the outcomes are just so substantially different, and it's got to be what you've just described, this holistic entire thing, the ethics, the morality, the, I don't know, how will she put this, Sharon? Do you understand where I'm going?
I do. We pray about this, we wrestle with this, we discuss this at every staff meeting. How do we get our schools, how do we keep our schools full? How do we retain the students that we have? What are some ways that we can improve? As I said, we have a saving mission, and our main goal is to get children into the schools, and how do we do that? I mean, we have financial difficulties at times. We need more money. Our schools need more money. We want to be able to update aging facilities and to provide wireless access in all of our schools. For technology, there's so many needs, and we keep trying to be as creative and as we can in how we can come up with that funding. And that's why anybody that's listening, I would encourage them, if they want to send a donation, we would certainly take it.
To tell them how to do that, Sharon, please.
We're trying to think of ways and getting out our message with Jerry's article, with Bill's tremendous efforts in marketing with our schools. We're trying to get the word out there so that our parents and guardians see just what a great good a Catholic school is for their children. And so that's always going to be something that we come up against. I'm telling you now as a grandmother, because I have a 7-year-old grandson, and as a mother, I know of nothing better right now in this world than a Catholic school, because the culture is so difficult, and the messages are just so differing and so sometimes just, very scary, that I would want my child, I want my grandchild where there are values. I want them to have that into this world, and that will carry them into the next. So I think Catholic schools are the greatest return on money anybody could ever give.
I know I got a unique situation in our family. I got a grandson that's in sixth grade, and the expectations for him are incredibly high, and he knows that because his other grandma teaches in the same corridor he's at, and then his cousin, who is also a main family at St. Malachy's, is the janitor in the corridor where he's at. So this grandson, he said the expectations are extraordinarily high because every teacher's known him since he was a baby.
Oh, yeah.
So, the expectations are there, so then they expel. But again, the reason for the story is all children could excel if they're given the expectations and given the support to reach
those. Exactly.
How do they give us some contact information? Obviously, I'll put it up with Jerry's paper, and it'll be on the website in a few days. Give us some contact information. People can get additional information, or if they want to make a major donation.
Well, our diocesan website is www.cdop.org, Catholic Diocese of Peoria, cdop.org. We do have an education portion to our diocesan website. We have all sorts of information there as well, or our contact information is on the education portion. So if you would like to contact any one of us, that would be wonderful as well. We have a strategic vision that we just printed and published and released to our pastors and principals, and we'll be sharing that with our stakeholders, and we'd be happy to give anyone a copy of that so you can see where our planning is going and what we're doing about it. So that would be...
And then at that website, all of our names, and in addition to others, are there if they would like to have a conversation with somebody. And I really urge the grandparents or the people who have somebody in the neighborhood that they feel could benefit from a Catholic education, simply being able to try to provide a little bit of scholarship money from somebody that may be struggling in a public school and could be so well served by being in a Catholic school, but just don't have the financial wherewithal to be in that Catholic school. What a great, great gift to the community, to the individual, to the family, to society, by being able to give somebody a leg up by a little bit of scholarship money.
Well, hey, thank you very much, all three of you, for joining us. God bless you on everything, and hopefully we'll help get the kids get better education. Thank you very much, and God bless America, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Doug.